Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. My name is Karen Edwards, and I'm reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this program is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, and I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, about Winona Ryder, who turned 50 last year. The Gen X icon, born Winona Horowitz, ushered in a new type of coming-of-age character with her quirky roles in such cult classics as Heathers, Beetlejuice, Edward Scissorhands, and Reality Bites. Accompanying that frame, though, came a series of highly publicized struggles. The breakdown of her relationship with Johnny Depp, with his notorious Winona Forever tattoo, troubles with depression, and the 2001 shoplifting arrest that she followed with a few years' hiatus from acting. Ryder returned as appealing as ever. Last year, she appeared in HBO's drama, The Plot Against America. But her highest-profile project in decades has been her role as mom Joyce Byers in Netflix's hit horror series Stranger Things, whose fourth season is in the works. How has she coped with this latest surge of media attention? "I'm not on the internet that much," she told Jimmy Kimmel, "but my parents are, and they forward me the good stuff." And as kind of a sideline, for those of us who turned 80 last year, including myself, there was also Chubby Checker. Singer and his fans celebrated the 60th anniversary of The Twist last year. And Paul Simon. This star has sold the rights to his entire songwriting catalog to Sony for a reported $250 million. Now let's look to the Centennial Living Complete Guide to Heart Health for folks over 50. And we're talking about food now. The impact of your genes on your cholesterol. This is like a sidebar article on this page. It turns out your body may override what's on your plate. When the 2015 to 2020 dietary guidelines for Americans removed the recommendation limiting dietary cholesterol to 300 milligrams per day at most, both doctors and everyday people were surprised. After all, high cholesterol foods such as eggs, cheese, steak, shrimp, and potentially many fried foods increase blood levels of cholesterol, right? Your liver makes about 80% of the cholesterol in your that your body needs. The rest comes from your diet. Plus, blood levels of cholesterol are controlled by your genes, which determine how well your body removes LDL, the bad stuff, from the blood. You can't alter this with diet, but you can with medication. Some people are hyper-responders, said Francine K. Welty. Their LDL increases in response to dietary cholesterol. However, so does their HDL, the good stuff, which may offset the risk from the elevated LDL. Right now, there's no way to identify hyper-responders other than by altering your diet to see how it impacts your cholesterol levels. In general, reducing the intake of saturated fat is more important than reducing cholesterol, says Michelle Rothenstein. But a lot of foods high in saturated fat have cholesterol. This may be the true reason why cholesterol from diets was thought for so many years to be bad for the heart. And there's another little corner here with a picture of some really luscious-looking berries. Berries are ripe with antioxidants. So overly restrictive diets mean you're getting fewer heart-healthy nutrients. The sat-fat conundrum. Low-carb diets can also be high in saturated fat from foods like red meat, including fatty beef, bacon, and pork. Poultry with skin, cheese, and butter. Saturated fat promotes artery-clogging LDL. You may have read that saturated fat is not the culprit we've been led to believe. However, Welty and other researchers say one of the largest studies on this topic is flawed because the researchers used a food frequency intake questionnaire, which underreports intake, and they included countries that have a lower saturated fat intake. Those of us doing preventive cardiology know saturated fat is not heart healthy. Plus, a Cochrane review of 15 studies with more than 56,000 participants published in 2020 found moderate quality evidence that cutting back on saturated fat reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease by 17%. And the more someone reduces their intake, the lower their total cholesterol and the greater the heart benefits. But replacing that sat fat with pasta and crackers won't help your heart. Based on the evidence, the AHA encourages reducing saturated fat intake and replacing it with polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fat, aka healthy fats. Specifically, they recommend keeping saturated fat to less than 6% of your total daily calories. That's 10 grams on a 1,500 calorie diet, or 13 grams on a 2,000 calorie diet. A 1 ounce serving of cheddar cheese has about 5 grams of saturated fat. Also, try to avoid trans fats, which are found in processed foods in the forms of partially hydrogenated oils, as much as possible. These fats raise LDL while simultaneously lowering HDL. Although the FDA no longer allows food manufacturers to add these oils to products since they're so unhealthy, you should still check the label. The FDA allows products that contain less than 5/10 of grams of these fats to list 0 grams trans fats on the Nutrition Facts label. The bottom line, find a way of eating that you can live with, literally. A diet high in plants and low in processed foods and red meat is the best way to support your heart health at every age. Carbs are fine, but opt for whole grain carbs and minimize your intake of added sugars. Note the words low and minimize. That doesn't mean you can't have these things. You just need to front load your diet with the healthier options. And in our next episode, we're going to look at 6 sneaky things that are hurting your ticker. Now we're going to AARP, the magazine, and a set of articles that I started last time, Cold Case Studies, The Man Who Brings Back the Dead. While acting as his mother's caregiver, an unassuming accountant stumbles on his true life's passion, solving America's most puzzling missing persons cases. This case is Callie Doe. In November 1979, in Caledonia, a small community in western New York, a farmer and his son spied a suspicious figure in their cornfield. At first, they thought it might be a trespassing hunter. But when Sergeant John York arrived, he could see that something terrible had happened. A slight teenage girl lay face down in the cornfield. She had brown curls, the tips of which were frosted blonde. She was wearing corduroys, a plaid shirt, and a man's red windbreaker. She had been shot in the forehead and the back. York gathered a team to investigate. They talked to neighbors, canvassed truck stops, and released a sketch of the girl, along with a post-mortem photograph retouched to erase the bullet hole over her brow. Nobody recognized her. Just a handful of strangers attended the girl's memorial service, drawn by the pathos and horror of a young murder victim all alone in the world, without even a name. Over time, she came to be known as Caledonia Jane Doe, or Callie Doe for short. John York and his team followed more than 10,000 leads in their sprawling investigation, tracking the windbreaker, looking into 64 serial killers as possible culprits. Contacting thousands of law enforcement agencies across the United States, Canada, and Europe. Weeks turned into months, months into years. A plain-spoken man with a hangdog look and a furrowed brow, York visited Callie Doe's grave every year. He would ask her, "What did we forget? What did we overlook?" York eventually became sheriff and turned to new technologies as they came along. In 2005, officials got a court order to exhume the girl's body so DNA could be extracted from her bones and hair. Enamel on the girl's teeth suggested she might be from the South or Southwest. An expert said pollen on the girl's clothes might have come from the San Diego area. But even as the Callie Doe case would come to occupy more hours and resources than any other in the history of the county sheriff's office, there were no breaks. The case haunted York, who vowed to solve it. She was shot at point-blank range right alongside the road, dragged into a cornfield, and shot through the back, he says. "You don't think that kid deserves some justice?" The caregiver. Carl Kopelman took a long time to find his purpose. He grew up in El Segundo, a beach city in Los Angeles County, the youngest of five. He had a talent for drawing faces, covering his school folders and doodled caricatures of teachers. As he got older, he parted with friends at the beach and got into trouble for scaling fences to skateboard in empty backyard pools. After graduating from high school in 1981, he stayed on his childhood home, taking jobs in construction and at an aerospace industry sheet metal fabrication shop. The backdrop to Kopelman's teen years was a media landscape filled with news of serial killers, and Kopelman, like many of us, found these stories at once repulsive and fascinating. He can recall seven serial killers who terrorized his part of California. Their nicknames, their methods, the types of victims they chose. He absorbed the horrible details of a case that came close to him, a teenage boy he knew was shot and dismembered by a man known as the Trash Bag Killer. Kopelman could not know it then, but his preoccupation with true crime would fuel his direction decades later. Something else would become part of his purpose. In his mid-20s, at his mom's urging, Kopelman started college, pursuing accounting because it seemed like a stable, good-paying profession. Along the way, he found he had an aptitude for spreadsheets. He bought a book on Excel and started studying sophisticated tools for parsing data. Kopelman's mother, Shirley Merrill, had been 40 when he was born, and by the time her youngest was mastering adulthood, Shirley was becoming elderly. A devout Catholic, Shirley was Kopelman's moral compass. She worked as a public health nurse, raised five kids, and fostered a child. Kopelman didn't absorb her religiosity, but her compassion and humility were lessons he took seriously. Mother and son were close, so close that, priced out of the local housing market and concerned for Shirley's well-being, Kopelman chose to stay on in his childhood home. In his 30s, when he was in a serious relationship and talk turned to marriage, he told his girlfriend not to wait for him. Shirley needed him. As the years went by, she needed him more. She developed heart problems and pulmonary disease and started needing a walker to get around. Now, this part of the article continues at some length, so I'm going to give you just a few tidbits here and there. Part of Kopelman's devotion to his mother came from the knowledge of all she had been through. Kopelman threw himself into his new role as caregiver. He helped his mom out of bed in the morning and made her oatmeal with fruit. He drove her to doctor's appointments and to mass every morning. Because of him, Shirley never had to go into an assisted living facility, which is pretty amazing, said his sister Annie Ellison. He put his own life on hold. "It was a rough time," Kopelman told me. He knew what he was doing was good and important, but he found himself a bit depressed, cut off from intellectual challenges. That's when he discovered that the interests he had been nurturing throughout his life, the artistic talent, the fascination with true crime, the facility with spreadsheets, might have a larger purpose. The spark was lit one morning in 2009 when he was reading the news before his mom woke up. The media were reporting that J.C. Duggard, an 11-year-old who had disappeared without a trace in 1991, had surfaced alive after 18 years in harrowing captivity. It was like a miracle, he recalled on a warm fall day, like someone coming back from the dead. Reading up on Duggard, Kopelman stumbled onto Web Sleuths, an online crime discussion forum. There he read about cases with drastically different endings. The need is real to find these people, according to the Federal National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, known as NAMUS. The number of missing and unidentified is a kind of recurring mass disaster. So Kopelman put his Excel skills to work, organizing unsolved cases spread across various websites, such as the Charlie Project, the Doe Network, and NAMUS. Writing a computer program that allowed him to filter by different parameters, he created two master spreadsheets, one for all the missing persons cases he could find and one for all the unidentified bodies. He figured that if he kept these lists comprehensive, updated, and easy to search, he might be able to match names to remains. Eventually, these spreadsheets would become prodigious. Kopelman's repository on the missing, for instance, came to number 19,000 people, with information indexed 13 different ways. So he began to hone his skills using other talents that he had developed over the years. And then one day he came across the 1979 murder victim known as Callie Doe. And we will continue with her story next time. Now, moving on to something a little more calming, let's go to prevention, finding your calm. This walking meditation will help clear your mental health clutter. Got a racing mind but can't sit still? Help is here. So today we're going to talk about why this is helpful, and then next time we'll talk about the different avenues that you can take. Often the concept of meditation conjures the image of a stationary cross-legged yogi surrounded by candlelight solitude and plenty of time. But when your days are full and your mind is cluttered, flitting from errands to emails to the latest family drama, that type of meditation might seem unappealing or downright impossible. In reality, meditation can be done anywhere, including while standing or walking. When starting a meditation practice, one can feel daunted by the expectation to sit still and totally quiet the mind. Even though neither of these need be true for a seated practice, the idea that they are mandates often keeps people away from it, says Nicole Katz, a structural yoga therapist and co-founder of the New York studio Yoga 216. And that's where walking meditation comes in. Walking meditation is also a good pick for anyone whose thoughts seem to be racing a mile a minute, because if your mind is overactive, your body often follows suit, says Katz. And while it might sound counterintuitive, moving your body while meditating can make it easier to tame your cluttered mind, says Ted Meisner, a mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher and host of the podcast Present Moment, Mindfulness, Practice, and Science. The mind can only focus well on the complex task at hand, one complex task at a time, actually. So paying full attention to even the simplest process of walking removes a bit of momentum from mental spinning. A different path to calm. So what does a walking meditation look like? That's really up to you. There are many ways in which someone might approach walking meditations, from a light and informal awareness of one's surroundings while hiking or walking the family dog, to a formal meditative practice for personal or even spiritual aspirations. The common thread, however, is that you should aim to be wakeful and present instead of on autopilot. If your mind wanders, that's okay, but the goal is to bring your attention back to the sensory experience of the present moment, he says. If you're not sure where to start, the answer is to keep it simple. For a gentle and informal walking meditation, just go for a walk. Give yourself permission to not have to do anything else. Just be as aware as you can of your surroundings and inner experience. And don't worry if you're short on time. Almost every human will walk at one point in the day, to work, to a meeting, to grab a coffee, says Yuna Kim, founder of the app Simple Habit, which offers 5-minute meditations that are designed to integrate mindfulness into the most stressful parts of your day. If you're looking for a more formal guided experience, scout out a location where you'll be able to practice in safety and absolute solitude. It can be a wooded area, a quiet neighborhood, street, or even a space the size of a yoga mat. Make sure to turn off phone notifications and anything else that might distract you. Pop in your headphones and listen to one of the many guided meditations available through apps like Headspace and Simple Habit. Or try this sequence designed by Meisner specifically to clear the mind. Begin by standing still, tuning into your body, and taking notice of whatever sensations may be present. Give attention to your feet, becoming aware of your contact with the floor, your shoes, temperature, and any tingling you may feel. When you feel your entire body receiving sounds, scents, and whatever other sensory input your immediate surroundings offer, begin walking slowly. Shift your weight to one leg while sustaining awareness. Slowly lift the other foot, moving it forward in a comfortable amount and placing it lightly on the ground. Shifting again, move your body to rest its weight on that forward leg and perceive the subtle adjustments your body is making for balance. Repeat this process. If you are practicing this on a yoga mat or in a small space, when you get to the end, bring your feet together and get reacquainted with the feeling of being still. Then experiment to find a pace you are comfortable with. If thoughts unrelated to the present moment begin to creep in, simply notice them as they come and go, refocusing your attention on your surroundings and physical sensations. Continue walking until you feel mindful and present. Then fully implement this practice into your life, taking a few moments every day to be present in the middle of your busy schedule, even if it's just walking from one place to the next. Acknowledge whatever is in your field of awareness and check in with any sensations that may be present, but don't force it. Also, another little bit of wisdom, be kind to yourself. Don't beat yourself up. If you're trying meditation for the first time and your mind wanders, it's less about shutting off your brain and more about letting the thoughts arrive, then pass, so you can return to your breath mantra or your other anchors. Now, for the rest of our time, we're going back to AARP, the magazine, and let's look at upfront the A-list, Brooke Shields' 6 tips for living your best life. 1. Find quiet. A few people at dinner is all I feel I want to do right now. Being extra social has always been a job for me. 2. Stay grounded. In January, I broke my femur, the biggest bone in the body. Go big or go home. It was a freak accident on a balance board. I also went horseback riding and fell off the horse and jumped into surfing and got a concussion. Now I'm thinking, Brooke, you need to stay on the ground. Don't be an idiot. 3. Mind the livestock. We shot a castle for Christmas in Scotland, and the cows there would make us late for work. They would sit down in the middle of the road, and we would be like, oh, traffic is horrible today. 4, bring your A game. Because I've been laid up, I've been playing games like backgammon and cribbage, which isn't relaxing because I don't like to lose. So I always bring my A game. 5, love your shape. Women need to stop comparing their bodies and understand how unique and amazing we are. Instead of focusing on what's wrong with us, too narrow, too curvy, etc., we should focus on what we love about ourselves. Ladies, pivot now. 6, my new website, Beginning Is Now, is a raw, funny look at how women embrace pivots at every age. I want to celebrate their new chapters, whether becoming an empty nester or the vice president. And this interview was as told to Natasha Stoyanov. Actress Brooke Shields launched beginningsisnow.com in September and stars in the film A Castle for Christmas, which was released in November. One final word. I try to teach my kids that courage is an element of life that we need to respect and summon. And sometimes you have to do it blindly. Brooke Shields is 56. Now let's look at the big 5-0. Happy birthday to Snoop Dogg. Actually, his birthday was in October. Now a multi-talented entertainment juggernaut, this legendary rapper first made it big in 1993 with his Dr. Dre-produced hit hip-hop record Doggy Style. At various points since then, he has, among other things, embraced reggae and gospel, launched the cannabis brand Leafs by Snoop, been a mega mentor on The Voice, co-hosted a 2021 Summer Olympics highlight series on Peacock with comedian Kevin Hart, and become pals with business partners with Martha Stewart, together headlining their VH1 Martha and Snoop's potluck party shows. His advice for getting older? You got to treat yourself like the wine, he told people. They say, fine wine, it gets better over time. He's actually released 2 wines under his name since last year, Snoop Cali Red and Snoop Cali Rosé, through the brand 19 Crimes. But the so-called dog father hasn't left his rap roots behind. He released his latest album, From the Streets to Va Sweets, last spring. And Winona Ryder, which we read about earlier, Gen X icon born Winona Horowitz, was named after Winona, a town near her Minnesota home. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.